Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that pits two movies with loads in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. This week, in the red corner, I got myself a crying, walking, sleeping, talking, living doll. Yes, Andrew McCarthy builds his perfect woman and watches as she comes to life through the power of pass. No idea. But here she is here, and she's hang gliding from 1987. It's Mannequin. While in the blue corner, it's one half of Barbieheimer, the half currently on its way to becoming the biggest movie of 2023. That's right, the Clash Pod team unplugged ourselves from the studio matrix and went to the actual cinema so we could cover 2023's Barbie.
Jonathan Switcher.
Punk sex.
Loves to talk to his work.
You know, you're the first thing I've created and made me feel like an artist.
Don't you like your new scarf?
He never expected.
Not specially.
To hear it talk back.
I really think I'm going crazy.
I am so glad you're working here. I never thought they'd hire anyone stranger than me.
You're the only one who can see me like this.
To the rest of the world, he's a disaster.
You're fired!
And she's a dummy.
Can I come to your house tonight?
Sure. I don't have anything big planned, just a giant blowout party with all the Barbies and planned choreography and a bespoke song. You should stop by.
So cool.
This is the best day ever.
It is the best day ever. So is yesterday, and so is tomorrow, and every day from now until forever. Yes! You guys ever think about dying?
So it's a living doll duel this week, but which film is better? Let's find out together. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
The Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. I would love to sink my teeth into your little bottom. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
And welcome, welcome to only the beginning of the excitement when it comes to Mannequin.
Barbenquin.
Good. Manaby. Better. Right then, it is part one of Mannequin versus Barbie. If you're new to the show, this is how it works. We're going to be doing Mannequin today. And Barbie on Thursday, at which point we'll declare which is the better film. So the clue Chris gave on my behalf on last week's show was...
For the best, it seems, because my clue was one of these films is on general release.
Yeah.
Because your clue wasn't... going to work, was it?
Was it not?
No.
Really?
One of them's wood.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Alex's clue was plastic fantastic.
Well, don't spoil it. I might use it again. But who knows? Who knows? A lot of people thought we were going to be doing Oppenheimer versus Barbie, which
makes a lot of sense.
It's upsetting, if anything, because you've been listening for a while, some of you. And how does that work? How does that connection section work? Every week, two movies with loads in common. What? What? Bomb, bombshell. That's it. And that joke is it.
Oh, excellent.
But that's it. And once you've got past that joke, we're doing Oppenheimer versus Barbie. No, just no. So, did you follow it up on Twitter with anything?
I didn't, no, because I was enjoying the guesses too much.
Yeah, yeah. Insidious versus Insidious, The Red Door was surprising.
Yeah. No.
Yep. Let's go back to Oppenheimer versus Barbie. So, your guesses came to life on our Twitter account, where we are at ClashPod, also on Instagram and TikTok at ClashPod. If you're in the business for a little extra Clash of the Visual variety, please subscribe to our Clash of the Titles YouTube channel. Hit that subscribe button to help us grow the pod. Right, guess-wise. It hasn't been like this for a while.
Okay.
One correct.
Yes.
What does that mean, Chris?
Perfect.
Perfect clue.
100%.
Fucking A. Right? Nailed it. Nailed it. So, congratulations. Another brand new champion.
Great.
Not the same as last week, because he wouldn't be brand new then. It's Damo, a.k.a. Daydreamer. Well done, Damo. Well done on your first winner, your championship of Guess World. Your prize is to try and tell us what the hell's going on in Mannequin. Just what? Honestly. Connection section then. Living Dolls.
Pink Cars.
Mannequin, like the Barbie doll, set feminism back decades.
I can't. You definitely got this one. Dressing up montages.
Oh, yeah. I don't have it, but yes, of course.
Both of them have dressing up montages. Weirdly, and only because I say this every week almost. Every movie has a car chase at exactly the same point. Bosh, both of these movies, you wouldn't think to look at them, have a car chase.
Yeah.
Have
good
a car
point.
Chase.
Good point.
They also have a chase involving loads of people trying to catch one person running between counters / cubicles.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent.
They both become human at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, excellent.
Yeah. And a chase where someone tries to go over something inexplicably thinking it would be quicker rather than go around it. Will Ferrell tries to climb over a barrier in Barbie, and G.W. Bailey decides to walk through a glass countertop, which tells you everything
so weird, yeah.
you need to know about Mannequin. any more?
No.
Right then, let's get into this. So, on Thursday, V will be a Barbie girl in a Barbie world, but will she find a life in plastic that's fantastic? Which means today, Chris gets to unpack the big box of crazy that is 1987's Mannequin. Chris takes on a journey.
Based on a true story, Mannequin revolves around an ancient Egyptian woman called Emmy, who doesn't look all that Egyptian, doesn't want to be married, and doesn't want to be a kept woman. So she appeals to the gods, and they answer her prayers by turning her into a department store mannequin in 1980s Philadelphia. What? Anyway, Emmy becomes muse to a man, which is like being a kept woman, then marries him after he's stolen all her ideas. But none of that matters, as it all ends with the greatest song in musical history, according to 9-year-old me.
Fact.
For your podcasting pleasure, nothing's going to stop us now. Mannequin! So, Vicky, when did you first see this perfect movie?
I've only seen it once before, and I was quite an old teenager, so it was like a student hangover film.
Right.
I thought it was bonkers, but I found it really comforting because it's got all, it just made me feel all those, you know, 80s nostalgia feelings, and I love the song, like you. Always disappointed at karaoke where they don't carry that particular song.
What karaoke place doesn't carry that song?
No, it must be a rights issue.
Did we try and do
we
it?
We always try. I'm always like, it's here somewhere. It's just not.
I remember very little about it. Which is for the best.
We could just do it in his kitchen.
That's so true. Why do we never think of that when we're not doing a photo shoot?
We're reenacting Blair Witch.
Weirdest photo shoot ever.
We think, maybe. Not sure.
I don't. It's not even the Blair Witch. Neither of us are in a corner. We're just holding hands facing a cooker. I don't remember that scene in Blair Witch.
Face the hob! Turn around!
I think you should let me post that picture because you can't see what you look like.
Sure. It's just, every time I see it, I feel weirdly exposed. You can't see either of our faces. It just says you were very vulnerable.
I honestly don't know if it was the Blair Witch. I feel we may have forgotten what movie we're trying to do.
No, I think it was me saying do this.
Right. That's even worse.
Do it.
Yeah, post
do
it.
Do it slower.
So, yeah, well, one previous watch for you.
Yes, that's correct.
Alex?
I've definitely been in a room when this has been on as a late 80s child. It was on because I've certainly seen... I don't remember the start, don't remember the end. I remember two things exclusively walking into this second viewing, which was weirdly... hang gliding, I remember that. And the second thing was failing to understand as a child why Captain Harris from Police Academy was no longer funny.
Interesting. Mm. So I have a very vivid memory of catching the end of film 86. Look it up if you're a youngster.
It was great.
And at the end of every episode, he would play a clip of a forthcoming film. I tuned in just as his clip was playing and went to school the next day to say, guess what? There's a new Police Academy movie.
Oh, bless you.
The sequence at the end when he's chasing them through the department store. It could be from Police Academy.
Yeah.
And so, I was very disappointed when that film never came out and everyone in my class thought I was a liar.
Yep.
At least you made an honest mistake.
Liar!
I watched this a lot when I was a kid. I guess we had it recorded from the telly, and it's just, well, it was easy to watch.
It's so short.
It's very brief.
Yeah.
And also, I guess I was in love with the woman.
You were in love with her, aren't you?
Yeah, it was formative. So 87 was the year everything changed. and it was thanks to Kim Cattrall in Mannequin, and also Belinda Carlisle, who does the song over the opening credits. Yeah. But that was when I was like, oh, hold on.
Hang on.
They're not that annoying.
This?
They're not that annoying.
Actually, maybe they're brilliant. I hate them.
So yeah, I barely needed to rewatch this. I know every beat of this film, weird as it is. So let's talk about the background very briefly. There's not a huge amount of behind the scenes stuff here. The idea came to the director, Michael Gottlieb. Apparently he was walking down Fifth Avenue, thought he saw a mannequin move. Boom, I've got a movie.
That's cult for you.
Although isn't there, I can't remember its name, there's something with Venus in the title, an old movie that is basically the same as this that he never referenced when he came up with this.
Yep. One Touch of Venus, 1948, a window dresser kisses a statue of Venus and it brings her to life.
Ooh, weird.
She turns into Ava Gardner.
Great.
Rock and roll. And also there is a 1960 Twilight Zone episode called After Hours where a mannequin comes to life and is human for a month. So... not an entirely original story, but I think the most interesting aspect of the behind the scenes of this is to do with a guy called Joseph Farrell. And I found out some information about him from a New York Times obituary in 2011. He's a marketing man, or as he was dubbed, a meddling numbers bloke. Mm. His company introduced demographics to the film industry, and they came up with the four quadrant theory that we often reference, where men and women, boys and girls, 25 above and below. If you can appeal to all four of those, you've got a hit in your hands. Hence the film we're talking about on Thursday, to be honest.
Yeah.
He's the guy who came up with the happier ending for Fatal Attraction after the test screenings that he put on. So he's had quite a big effect on the film industry. But he was a marketing guy, barely produced, but he decided to produce Mannequin using all of the marketing that he knew at his disposal. And the main thing that he did was cast it off of marketing. They did testing with teenage girls, with all these actors, and Andrew McCarthy was the one they liked the most. And so the quote is, though not a star, Mr. McCarthy was cast after tests of his movie shows he strongly appealed to girls, the target audience of this movie. And he was proved right, because the film cost $8 million and made $40 million in the States alone.
You can't underestimate the influence of this guy, Joseph Farrell, though. He is the guy who, even now, when a movie is focus grouped, he was the originator of that. So all the test screenings that studios do now, they pretty much all came from him.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
For better and worse.
Of course.
So, yeah. And I guess thinking about this film, it makes no sense.
Yeah,
but I guess
writer,
he's just chucked
guess,
a bunch
but,
of things. Yeah. Old montage, song, good-looking man, good-looking woman, kiss at this point, car chase at this point.
Car chase, yeah. And that's it. Yeah, it is.
Like
it
an
is.
Algorithm.
But I will say this. We'll talk about it on Thursday, but it's been a long time since I've been to an actual cinema, not a press screening, and sitting at a packed cinema... and watching what kids, there were a lot of children there, what they laughed at in Barbie was fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I've gone, there's something in this marketing. There's something in this test screening stuff. You should learn what they laugh at. And I'll tell you, on Thursday, one of the jokes, I was like, how do you even know about this?
But the real success story was that song, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, written by Albert Hammond Sr.
Yeah.
Who's had a million hits, father of the Strokes guitarist, and Diane Warren, who we talk about a lot, many, many, many Oscar-nominated songs.
Has she still not won?
I think she won one recently, didn't she? Didn't it finally happen for her?
I honestly can't remember.
Oh, I should have checked that. But it was given to Starship vocalist Grace Slick, who's a rock and roll legend, and Mickey Thomas. And yeah, it was number one in America in 87. It topped the UK singles charts for 4 weeks and was the biggest selling song of 1987 because I bought it 1,000 times. But it was nominated for an Oscar, a Golden Globe, a Grammy, and it lives on perhaps as much as the film does.
If not more, maybe.
I think maybe a bit more.
Maybe a little
bit. Maybe more. I mean, certainly you can get hold of it if you want to listen to it, which is a bit harder if you're in the UK to find Mannequin. If you had to sign up to MGM.
Yeah, don't forget, 7 days.
7 days trial. We should have said that last week. Yeah. No, I bought the DVD.
That's not a surprise. That's what you do every week.
It was cheaper.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was $1.99 because I've already done the trial. So, anyway, into the movie. Egypt. A long time ago, just before lunch.
Funny. I was sold on that. I was
really?
I'm ready for this. That's a great opening. Yeah. You've got me. You've hooked me in. I don't know why we're in Egypt, and I never will.
Kim Cattrall plays an Egyptian called Emmy. Does Kim Cattrall look like an Egyptian?
No.
Okay.
Different times, though, right?
Doesn't matter.
No one cared.
Are we sure what Egyptians look like?
Well, it's Cleopatra's subject to debate, isn't she?
There you go.
But this woman isn't Cleopatra.
No.
So Cleopatra got about a bit. I don't know.
Is Emmy an Egyptian name?
I've no idea.
Not me neither.
Probably
me neither.
Not.
No.
Probably not.
Yeah. She dresses up as a mummy to hide from her mummy.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, do you think they knew about that? Do you think they realised that was a joke?
I've no idea with this movie. Everything is up for grabs with this film in terms of what it knows is funny and what is just chance.
She's got no interest in an arranged marriage to a man who sells cow dung. She wants to invent. She wants to fly.
Oh, yeah. She wants to invent. She wants to just hang on to that because that does come back later. Yeah.
She's got a dream.
Yeah, she's got a dream.
She's got a dream.
Actually, is it to be entombed forever? Probably not.
No.
But no matter.
No. Her dream is to fly. And we learn later that she did even build a pair of wings at one point.
She did.
Such a strange dream.
To fly?
Yes. Yes. Yes, for this movie specifically.
Yeah.
It sort of doesn't attach to anything else.
Shouldn't
ever.
It just be, I live in the castle and my dream is to get out of the castle and then at the end you can go, I've come out of the store. Dream achieved.
There are some easy fixes, I think.
I think so.
I'm amazing. I mean, she's going into an arranged marriage. I really want to see the world.
Yeah.
Why don't you see the world throughout time? Amazing.
Because we've only got access to a department store at night.
That has got a hang glider.
And some very cheap animators.
Well, yeah, we're getting there. But Mum doesn't think that women can change anything. So Emmy asks the gods for help. They respond. Mm-hmm. Boom, we're into the animated credits.
Well, let's deal with the fact that we're never going to announce or analyse her mother's grief, which is obviously throughout this film. Her mum has watched her daughter, who she clearly loves, disappear.
Gone forever.
Never to return, never to have any explanation. I mean, this could be the dissolution of the Egyptian Empire right here.
Maybe.
Where she goes, the gods are against us, we should no longer worship them.
Right, yeah, hadn't thought of it.
Guessing marketing said we don't need to see a mother crying for the next 5 minutes. So the animated credits, I realised that there's lots missing from this film in terms of what happens to Emmy between now and 1987,
yes,
Philadelphia. So I went back and watched the credits properly because they are giving you the story. Were you paying attention to what she's been up to?
No. She says it at one point. She was with Michelangelo.
Christopher Columbus and Michelangelo. So I guess at various points in time.
She's been a doll?
Yeah.
Well,
no,
that's what
they
I
didn't
thought.
Have, they didn't have mannequins, by the way.
They didn't have mannequins, but I thought when she was like, well, I was with Michelangelo, you just go, oh, you must have been a sculpture then,
no,
I guess.
He's,
but then not with
he's obsessed
Columbus.
With a guy called David, as we find out later. Yeah, she visits Rome. Mm-hmm. She goes to what I believe are the Middle Ages, where some monks see the sunlight and vanish.
Maybe.
I don't know what that bit is. Then we've got Da Vinci.
Yeah,
then we've
she becomes the Mona Lisa.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We've got Columbus.
Columbus. I mean,
oh, so she's always a muse.
There's Vikings.
From...
There's some Vikings. She meets some monsters in a lift.
I think there are aliens.
Right, because she goes to another planet at the end of it, I think.
Right, this is where it breaks down, because what this should do...
It's not chronological, is it?
Also, it's just mad that they've gone, people will be paying enough attention to realise our exposition in this movie is this entire animated sequence, which we are going to reference throughout the rest of the movie.
I've never paid attention to the animated sequence ever watching it. It was only this week when I got to the end of the film, I was like, oh shit, I better watch that.
Right. Exactly.
Rubbish.
So Let's play this movie's game. Let's go on the journey. So she's going through time. She's traveling through time. At no point in any of these bits is she a mannequin. She's a muse, no. But she's not a mannequin.
Yeah.
Then she goes into either the future or another planet, which would suggest that she can only then travel further into the future. It's not like she's jumping around time like Sam Beckett. She's basically traveling further and further into the future. So how does she go into the future and then come back to Philadelphia in the 80s? And also, is that sequence in the animated opening where she's on a conveyor belt and they're building mannequins, is that supposed to suggest how she turned into a mannequin?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if the people who did the animation ever met the people who made the movie. So I wouldn't find too much correlation.
Don't try to thread the needle.
Because we do end up in Philadelphia today, /1987, and we meet Jonathan Switcher.
Switcher, I'm a bit obsessed with this. Is it because he changes jobs a lot in the first 10 minutes?
I guess.
Is that all it is?
No, that's it. Fine. You figured it out.
Love it.
He's talking to a mannequin that he's in love with, and he's fired for making 3 or 4 mannequins a month rather than 3 or 4 a day. So we get a job montage.
Yep. He kills a child.
Yeah, he kills a child. With the balloon animals, he gives a kid a balloon, he flies off. So that kid's dead.
Bye, kid.
He's fired for sculpting hedges he should be trimming. He's fired for turning pizza into art because he's an artist.
He's a sculptor specifically. Sculpted. Not going to come back.
And then we meet his girlfriend, Roxy. He picks up on a Harley. She's upset that he's lost his job. And then he sees his mannequin in the rain and it makes him feel like an artist.
Right. That's okay. I'll buy that a bit. I mean, they all basically look the same. That's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, they're homogenised parts.
That is racist.
That
honestly,
is racist,
not all mannequins look the same.
I can't say that.
But, yeah, I was with it.
He assembled something from instructions.
Yeah, which him only making 3 or 4 a month is kind of impossible because they're poured in plastic and then you screw them together. But he's obviously doing something else with them that wastes a bit of time. So,
well, he does a lot with them later.
He does, yeah, he's predisposed to doing that.
But before he's doing that, we head to Prince & Company, a department store run by Claire Timkin, played by...
Estelle Getty!
One of the funniest people in history. And we get a brief action sequence involving a swinging sign. Did this get your pulse racing, Alex?
I had to take a moment after this.
Why?
I literally hit pause. It's intense, the way he goes up. And then there's some exposed electrics behind him.
True,
and he gets zapped on his bottom.
Yeah. Yep.
He saves her life, so he lands a job at her department store where she's been in charge for 2 weeks because her dad's dead and she wants to make the store great again.
I thought it was her husband who died. I think it's her pervert husband.
Pass.
I'm sure her husband was in charge.
She's quite old.
Yeah, I think it's her husband, and he died as he wanted to go.
Oh, they make so many jokes about knickers.
In the women's underwear department.
But then Jonathan Switcher, who's your good guy, he's like, I'm in the knickers bit again. And then he walks in on a lady changing, and because it's 1987, the beat is, she's not traumatised at all by that, and he's like, oops, sorry, but he's still lovable.
Well, he's looking for his mannequin. In the women's changing room.
Like
I
you
mean,
do.
You
yeah.
don't, that, Your Honour. Really? That's not going to hold. That is not going to hold. Isn't he called Switcher because she switches for him?
Sure.
And not for anyone else?
Both answers are correct.
Okay. People can be more than one thing.
Yes, they can.
Jonathan Switcher can't. He can just be a weirdo.
I think Michael Gottlieb was probably just looking at a light switch while he was writing it.
Switcher. That'll do.
Switch her.
Oh my God, you've solved it!
Thanks.
That is what it is!
So I was right.
Yes, you were right.
Jonathan is introduced to Richards, played by James Spader, giving quite the performance.
Big performance.
He's channeling some John Lithgow from Santa Claus the movie.
Yes, I see that.
He's playing human slime?
I think so.
It's mad, this, because this is the same year that Andrew McCarthy and James Spader starred in the Bret Easton Ellis adaptation Less Than Zero.
Ah.
It's just, wow. I mean, what were they thinking doing this?
Just a palate cleanser, I guess so.
Mm-hmm. And probably a big paycheck.
Yeah.
Yep. And so he gives him a mailroom job where Jonathan, eventually doing that job, finds his mannequin and he meets window dresser Hollywood Montrose, who likes that Switch is stranger than him. Now, let's talk about Hollywood. I thought this was an offensive stereotype, maybe not helped by being played by someone who I assume is a straight man, but... What do you think about Hollywood? I've sort of changed my tune really thinking about it this time.
It's hard. You could call it, at first, I did that. I was like, oh, stereotypical, like, you know, the overt campness and the way that he's dressed and that he's sort of, his mysterious boyfriend is like kind of rules him and things like that. But then it does work in that a person like that would be, because of his experience of prejudice, more accepting of Jonathan's real fucking weirdness. Like if you had a straight white person in that role, they'd be like, I'm reporting you for having sex with a doll.
Correct.
But someone that's experienced life possibly on the fringes, because it's 1987, would be like, okay, I see you. You're not harming anyone. Let's just try and meet you where you are with that. So it works for me now.
I agree. It's not his fault, and it's not Meshach Taylor's fault, the actor who plays Hollywood.
No.
It's the issue is the fact that they don't give him a single funny thing to say, and he's clearly meant to be the funny person.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I think 9-year-old me thought he was very funny.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's interesting, though, because this is the mid-80s, and this is the sort of the third character in a big summer movie, and he's not hiding his sexuality, he's dressing outrageously, he's discussing his boyfriend openly, he's friends with the straight guy who immediately accepts him. Most of the films at that time, the straight guys would be making horrible jokes.
Yeah.
But actually, someone does say something horrible, and our hero defends his honour.
That's right.
And so I think it's just a very nice friendship that you didn't normally see in this era of filmmaking.
Sure.
But who are you crediting there? The filmmakers and writers or mass marketing strategy that has discovered that in 1987 this was okay and so we will then put it on film?
Maybe. I feel
so
like
it was palatable to audiences. If they focus group this and they were like, great, okay, we'll carry on. Mm. They might have changed it if they'd gone, oh,
we're not ready.
No, I feel like they went out on a limb doing that, and I think it works this time, and at least now you know where that character that Jordan Peele plays in the Gremlins 2 sketch comes from, because he's doing Hollywood.
Yeah.
So we also meet Captain Felix Maxwell, played by G.W. Bailey. He's the Night Security Commander, and he's also Lieutenant Harris from Police Academy.
I think we should just call him Lieutenant Harris throughout.
I always think of him as Captain Harris, but I think that's Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol.
Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah. All my notes call him Harris.
Captain Harris, I mean, this is the weird thing. I've never sort of gone, well, the Police Academy movies, they're quite special, they're quite good.
Yes,
we did do that literally on an hour-long episode.
All right.
You say that all the time.
Okay, I do say that all the time. I'm speaking more generally as...
Publicly, you've never said it. You say it privately all the time.
Wouldn't say it on Sky.
Yeah.
Not to Christopher Nolan.
I wouldn't say it to Christopher Nolan, who I know, by the way.
He loves Assignment Miami Beach. He says the minute Steve Guttenberg left, it got better.
So Harris, Captain Harris, has a dog called Rambo, and they take their job very seriously. Now, you're saying he's not at all funny in this film. Again, I can go back to 9-year-old me.
Yeah.
That dog was making me piss myself. Yeah. You know, it's a dog. It's an angry dog.
Yeah,
it doesn't do what it's told.
And it's called Rambo.
I spent a lot of time trying to work out stuff. There's a joke coming up where James Spader asks Captain Harris Captain Harris says something like, oh, I'll write it down, and James Spader goes, you write? And Captain Harris goes, no, but he does, about the dog.
Yeah.
And you just watch three people not know what the joke is, but just give it a shot. Just give it their best shot. But no one in that room knows what that joke is meant to be.
Test audiences loved it.
That's the thing. So who cares?
The dog can write. That's brilliant.
It's bewildering. Like I bless him. G.W. Bailey, I think, is great. I do. I really do. Mm. But what do you do with that? No, but he can. He gives it his all. There's just nothing there.
That bombshell, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, Emmy lives.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.
And we're back, and the mannequin's on the move because Emmy comes to life.
Yeah.
She's pretty chill about it all, but
she's really fun. She's basically got locked-in syndrome, and she's like, that's like, every time she goes, I have to go back in the window, you're like, run! And why? Why do you have to go back in the window? It's a living death. This is what's happening to her.
What? Yeah, we need some rules applied.
She's like Alexa in that she knows to come to life when only Jonathan is in the room, which means she has a level of sentience even when she's a doll, which means she's got locked-in syndrome.
Yeah.
Which is a living death.
I believe, though, test audiences didn't like her having the existential crisis. So that was removed.
They showed the diving bell and the butterfly. They're like, we fucking hate that, so don't do it in this.
Oh, that's a good film.
Yeah.
We'll never do it.
No.
No. So we're never going to address why she's a mannequin.
They don't, do they?
Exactly, fine. That's fine. It's not our job.
I mean, I can.
No, screw it.
I've got a change. Actually,
sorry, if you've got a theory, Al, by all means.
No, shut your room. I change.
All right, fine. So, Jonathan thinks he's having a breakdown. That's fine. He should do. She takes her clothes off, and then off screen, they create a tennis window.
And everybody loves it.
I mean,
someone says, that's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
It increases sales to the department store within seconds.
I know. The best bit is when the whole board of a multi-million dollar enterprise is like, we need to talk about the windows. And then Claire's like, but if people are looking at you, it's like, you've got it, Claire. Come on, you can get here. If there are people outside, they're looking at the windows, they will come in the shop. And it's like, that's the whole point.
Which would be great if the film could afford extras, but that shop never gets any busier.
And the board are like, we need to talk about the windows. Not the fact that the shop is entirely empty the whole time.
Someone describes it as art, the window. Yeah. It's a tennis ball going back and forwards on fishing wire.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, maybe have we been spoiled by fantastic window displays in perhaps Selfridges on Oxford Street at Christmas time, maybe, or Hamleys or whatever.
I'm sure they're getting better as technology improves.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest, I took this at face value at the time, of course, as a child. I'm like, oh yeah, this is a thing that could happen in the world. And even watching it now, I'm like, fine. Obviously, we're analysing it. If I wasn't analysing, I'd be like, yeah, fine, whatever. Yeah.
They get better. The cycling one's better than the tennis ball.
It's actually quite good.
And the one where the bus is outside shop window, 3D, I'm into it.
Yeah.
Jonathan tells Roxy about this. She isn't having any of it, and I haven't mentioned the subplot. She's being sexually harassed by a European man at work.
She sure is.
Is he European?
I think he's
supposed to be Italian. He's supposed to be Italian.
I thought he was meant to be Arabic. He is an Egyptian actor.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh shit.
And I think he's doing an Italian accent.
Is that an Italian accent?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't know now.
I spent quite a long time looking him up because, you know how I feel about my people being represented on screen.
Okay.
And I was really...
You can have him. You can have him, Al.
Armand.
And how do you feel about him? Is this a positive...
What do we think?
Representation?
In 1987?
Can I ride you? Can I ride you?
You look foxy. Can I ride you?
Okay.
That's right. That's what he says.
That is what he says.
No, because he doesn't, his English isn't great because he's an immigrant and he's come here and, you know, give him a break is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mm. And then, wait a minute. Have I blocked this out? So she does eventually go and shag him, but he can't get it up. Yep, is that right?
But then he still is angry and blames her for him not being able to get it up.
Because she's so cold.
That's right.
She's so cold.
She's a cold fish. That's
again,
right.
Who is this movie for?
Me. 9-year-old me.
You wanted a can't get it up joke in a fantasy comedy romance.
Serves Roxy right. She's cold.
Yeah, she's a bitch.
She is evil in this.
She flips to being evil.
She becomes the main villain.
She does.
It's a thankless role.
Well, yeah, do you want a bit of plot? So Richards is working for BJ Wirt at a rival department store called Illustra, and they're trying to sabotage Prince and Company. It's basically the plot of 13 going on 30. Prince is being sold to Illustra.
Yes.
But they postpone the sale because Windows.
Wait. Ticking clock. Tick, tick, tick. 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Only 6 weeks, you say.
Oh, I am on tenterhooks. This movie suddenly...
nearly 2 months.
It ratcheted up the tension.
By the end of quarter four, we must have solved this problem.
Switcher is made visual merchandiser, thanks to his success.
Which is what I thought he was, but no, he was doing the mailroom.
He was in the mailroom, And then we get a proper...
Madness montage.
Proper montage.
Yeah. Does not advance the plot in any way. They're supposed to be working. They are fucking around quite a bit.
No,
frankly.
They play some 80s synths and she dances. They dress up as gangsters, have a dance. He does Phantom of the Opera. They dress up as rock stars. He does some tricks with a hat and she gets in her underwear.
She does.
Yeah. I thought he was still in costume when actually the montage had finished because he's wearing bowling shoes and I was like, and a silk scarf and a wool sports jacket.
Mm.
I mean, if he's
it
trying...
looks good.
What? Yeah, come on. I think all those 80s styles look good still.
I do.
So, she becomes his muse because, as I said in my intro, that's what every independent woman wants. We get the cycling window.
Yeah. She asks when she hears some music coming out of speakers, where do they hide all the musicians? Which, again, doesn't help explain how this time travel scenario works. How long has she been asleep? I thought she'd been into the future or an alien planet.
I think a planet, yeah. I don't know if she's been in the future. I think that works.
So how long has she been asleep before?
A while.
Right.
Well, we've had Vikings, Columbus, Michelangelo and Da Vinci. We've not had anything more recent than that.
So it stops after that. Okay.
Who knows?
Looking for answers?
Reading so much into that animated sequence that the director never even watched.
I just paid too much attention to it. I think I hooked onto it because I was like, God, if I wasn't doing this for the pod, I'd have totally ignored the animated sequence and I'd have missed 90% of this movie's plot.
So Maxwell is now working for the baddies he's after. He wants to strip search Switcher. I wonder if he's... Is he closeted?
I wonder
Is that what he's making him... He called him a Mary earlier and that was the bigoted thing he said that he got called out for and then...
And G.W. Bailey said that he always felt Captain Harris was a closeted gay man.
I think there's a lot of that energy there, yeah.
Yeah. He also calls him a fart blossom. Awesome.
He does.
Terrific.
It's not. Have you looked it up? It's disgusting.
Why would you look it?
No, is it going to upset people that are listening?
Well, I don't know any more than mannequin. What do you think a fart blossom is?
I've no idea.
You just like the turn of phrase.
I thought it was related
to scent. Romantic.
Yeah.
Done. Let's leave it.
Okay.
Where it goes is unpleasant.
You can Google it yourselves if you want to know.
The internet is there for
you. All right, there are two versions. I'll do the clean one. A fart blossom is where it blossoms out of your hand, having caught your fart and released it into someone's face.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's a bit of fun.
Yeah,
sure.
That's a fart blossom. And a cake sailor.
So, a bit of plot stuff. Switcher's offered a job at Illustri, turns it down. The baddie's finding with a dummy. There's a fight. Some photos are taken. Emmy hang glides through the store.
That's right.
How strong is the air conditioning? I thought you need wind for hang gliders.
I thought it was on a corkscrew of some sort so that... I don't know why. I thought it was there to amuse the shoppers, perhaps. And that... Right, sorry,
it's
context.
Attached to the wall.
Is it?
I think so.
What? Right, she's just flying down free, isn't she?
Context. In the...
She says no.
In the Morrison's in Blackburn, when it was built, you know, you make your own fun in Blackburn in the late 80s, and they, for no reason, they put in this ginormous clock with a lion and a jungle scene and a monkey and whatever, and at quarter past, it would, like, bing bong, and then on the hour and half past, it would do this display. It was like a giant, giant clock thing, and the lion would move its paws, and if you were in the Morrison's, which was massive, you would go and watch the clock, and so we would go shopping to watch this fucking clock, right? So I'm used to big shops putting on a bit of entertainment for myself. So I thought this hang glider thing was on effectively like a corkscrew pole.
But you'd be able to see that.
Yeah, you would, yeah.
Those are things. That's a physical object.
Right, but then it doesn't make any sense because how is she flying around the shop?
And we've come back to where we were a moment ago without...
Maybe we should just cut that bit out about Morrison's.
A brief visit to Blackburn Morrison's in the late 80s, which was pleasant.
I wish you could have seen it, Alex. I wish you could have seen it.
I can picture it and I can picture myself going to watch it.
At the St John's Shopping Centre in Leeds, there was a big glass case with a Heath Robinson style machine in that every half hour moved a bit.
Yeah.
Bond Street Centre had a giant wooden snake that you could crawl inside as a child and go round and then come out the other end.
Is that the old fashioned arcade?
It's not anymore. They've redone it.
Right.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Now we get the 3D window, which Alex was such a big fan of, and someone in the movie says is beyond genius. And we get a success montage where newspaper articles about the crowds and how many people Switcher is attracted to the store make it's front page news.
It sure is, Chris.
Illustra sales are down 89% because of this window.
89%.
I mean, that's all of your sales.
Can you fathom that? 89%. It's not just an arbitrary figure. 89.
They do a sailing window. He's going for shags with the mannequin. He's made the youngest VP in history.
Question.
Yes.
If he's having sex with her when she's a human and someone else sees her, does it like close up?
Oh, no.
pop off his dick?
I'm going to say yes.
Right.
Because I wonder what are on the pictures Estelle Getty sees. She talks about at the end of the film.
Which surely she should make some money from. I mean, she has video footage of a mannequin coming to life.
Yeah.
Does she? That's what she's seen.
What has she seen?
A lot. She's seen a lot, Chris. You can see it. You look in her eyes.
Yeah.
God, they tell a story.
Well, BJ says he's got pictures that could ruin Switcher's life. These are pictures of him fully clothed on top of a wooden... dummy.
A plastic doll, but that would ruin your life because you're trying to have sex with a doll and no one's caught that.
But I don't see...
She could have fallen onto him.
I've fallen onto lots of mannequins in my time.
She's on top of him and he's got his hand like round her bum, so he's trying to like...
He was trying to pull the panties.
My question to you...
Jesus Christ.
My question to you, Vicky, is how would it ruin his life if everyone he works with knows he's going for shags with a mannequin and think it's great and all wait outside and sort of clap and cheer him.
That's a good point.
They're totally down with it.
The public love it, don't they? Yeah, it wouldn't affect his life at all.
If you're an artist, you're just an eccentric.
That's true.
That's what he is. He's eccentric carrying that doll around the store.
That beat is in the film. That works, isn't it? They're like, oh, let him get on with his craft kind of thing.
Yeah. And it works because the next window is a photo session. Apparently that's genius as well. They dress in black tie now and he takes Emmy out in the town, introduces her to Roxy. She gets annoyed, so agrees to shag her harasser. Go feminism!
Yeah, he goes for us.
I mean, let's be fair. Roxy is also sexually assaulted by BJ as well. Yeah. He kisses her without asking and then touches her nose. That's my gal.
Mm-hmm.
But she's the villain, so she deserves it.
Right.
Harris. Harris dons camo and calls him a prevert. They have the car chase that Alex mentions where a car gets stuck between two walls. And then
it's a good stunt.
I like that.
It's
and
good.
Switcher heads back to the store and shags her in a tent and they both say the L word.
In a hammock at first, though. Mm-hmm. And
impossible.
That's what I thought!
Yeah.
I was like, is that even possible?
No.
It's not. It's not, is it? I mean, would just fall out.
I've never tried it, but I thought about it
You'd
for a long time.
You'd have to have played the game of the stillest sex you'd ever had.
So, ancient Egyptian window. Well done. Got there in the end.
oh, shit. Another connection to last week. People promoted to vice president of companies without any skill set required to be vice president
That's
of
the
companies.
80s for you.
Don't get obsessed with that again.
I can't help it, though. He's just suddenly vice president. I mean, she's been there 2 weeks. She clearly, her husband did it all. And
he's a maverick. He's turned round the blooming company's fortunes. He's earned every penny of that.
But he hasn't. He hasn't. Emmy has. Emmy has done all this work and he's riding her coattails. Yeah. And she says,
mate, they're a team.
What does she say? She says, this is exactly where I want to be. Mm. There's nowhere more perfect. She's been on a boat with Columbus. She has worked with Da Vinci and Michelangelo. This is better.
This is it.
Working at night in a department store, posing on an ironing board, pretending to surf.
And only a bit, because then she has to be entombed in plastic. Yeah. She's not even alive for most of the time.
And while she's entombed, she's stolen by Richards and Captain Harris. While Switcher is asleep, he wakes up naked in the store to much applause.
Why are they clapping?
I think I'd get sacked for this. Also,
you would, Chris.
Can you now sell those coats if they've been covered in dick? His dick's rubbed on all of them.
This is where someone goes, it's art. It's like, it's just like we're playing fast and loose with what words mean in this film by this point.
That's ridiculous.
And this is art. It's a man asleep, naked, in the store, under merchandise. Art.
Art. Mm. Switcher bursts into a Lustra, punches Richard out. Well done. There's a department store chase, the one that confused me into thinking this was Police Academy when I was 9. Maxwell now has a German Shepherd called Terminator.
Right, so they killed Rambo off screen. This is unbelievable and unforgivable.
Even I was upset by it.
It's like, how? What? Why? It's just unnecessary.
They should have just kept the old dog but given him a fancy new collar because he's got a promotion. That's what
sure,
I would have done.
Exactly. Why is Rambo dead? Unless Emmy had something to do with it, because Rambo is terrified of Emmy and we're never sure why. He disappears off and comes back yelping.
Mm.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe when a dog looks at Emmy, she doesn't turn back into plastic. She stays human and kicks dogs.
It's not plastic.
Oh, sorry. Wood. Is it really?
Yeah.
Are you sure mannequins are made of wood? I don't think they're made of wood.
These ones are wood.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Because they make
how
so many.
How deep a dive did you go on about this movie?
No, there's about 3 jokes in it about having wood.
Right.
Oh, is there?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, that's not a bad joke, actually. What shall we call our kid Pinocchio? That's all right.
Yeah. Okay, yes, yes. Yep. Yes.
So Switcher takes out 10 security guards. Roxy does the worst run I've ever seen in a film. So she can incinerate Emmy. Hollywood saves him with a hose. He gets his big hero moment. Mm. Andrew Hill Newman shows up as compactor room janitor.
Yes.
He comes out of the loo doing his trousers up. So she comes to life and they turn the machine off just in time to stop her being killed.
Quick question. Why does Roxy get covered in rubbish from above for no clear reason?
Well, it's the shredder. So presumably the chute is above the shredder because the rubbish would be shredded.
Right.
So it's just the shredding room, I think.
But none of that rubbish travels up the conveyor belt.
No, it does. It misses, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Completely, in fact.
It hits her, and it's about 10 feet away from the conveyor belt.
Nowhere near it.
That would shred it. Yeah. Maybe that's why compactor room janitor is there. Do department stores have giant shredders in their basement?
I wanted
Maybe.
To believe it.
You've got a lot of stuff to get rid of.
Yeah.
A lot of rubbish.
You can't just put it all out on the street, can you?
Lot of rubbish.
Do we enjoy Hollywood with the hose?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like the fact that he's just improvising and saying nothing that has any relevance to anything to do with this movie?
I was projecting a lot. I felt quite cathartic because I imagined a man like that in that time might have been hassled by the police at some point or authority or whatever. So he was like getting his own back on these people that had maybe made his life more difficult.
Doesn't really go on long enough, though, does it? Could go on longer.
You think so?
Well, it's in this unhappy place where it's neither short enough to be funny or long enough to come back round to being funny. It's this awkward length where it just sort of goes on a bit long.
It's quite repetitive.
And they're clearly saying to Meshach, going, anything else, just improv.
Say anything.
Anything else. Anything. Is there a script? No. We came off the script a long time ago.
Compactor room janitor sees Emmy come to life and starts kissing mannequins to try and find her. Quite a good joke. He finds Roxy and it's a miracle.
The third person to sexually harass Roxy.
Yeah, kisses her against her will.
Bloody hell.
Which I'm told we don't do anymore, so that's bad, I guess.
60% of the single men in this movie assault Roxy.
Yes, they do.
Emmy's revealed to everyone as the villains are trying to kink shame our hero and fail. Claire shows up with the CCTV footage of the villains doing grand theft, conspiracy, kidnapping. She's got them. Captain Harris just keeps saying, "She's the dummy! She's the dummy!" It's very Harrison that the heroes have driven him mad. And then all the baddies get arrested while the janitor tries to kiss more dummies. I'm only keep bringing him up because he returns in Mannequin 2.
Mannequin on the Move.
Mannequin on the, and he even gets a name. The character gets a name, Andy Ackerman. They were like, he's who we need back.
What a start.
Forget Kim Cattrall. And so finally, we get a wedding window.
I quite like that.
They get married. And This is where we hear Nothing's Going to Stop Us Now by Starship on a freeze frame.
Yes.
Not very good freeze frame.
On a ship with Columbus, saw Michelangelo. Happy to get married in a store window. I just don't think the three marry up. I think you've seen and done bigger things than getting married in a department store.
Well, you haven't done anything. You've witnessed men doing stuff, which is also a little bit of a gap on your CV.
She split up from Columbus because she told him the world was round.
Right, yes.
Which is a myth in itself that he was even trying to prove the world was round.
No, he wasn't.
No.
Right, let's do the questions. Vicky.
So I don't really like it when any other characters are in it. I think this film is fucked up, but it's best when it's just the two of them. So even though it's... doesn't advance the plot. It's the weird dressing up dancing montage.
Me too. The dressing up montage. I want all those clothes. I want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
Alex.
Well, I quite like the Travelator scene at the end, the conveyor belt thing, but only because I was like, oh, it's a bit like Toy Story 3. That's good.
Yeah.
But no, I think I like the fact that it has a similar structure to Paranormal Activity. And I was genuinely excited to see what the new window would be at the end of every night. You know, like Paranormal Activity, it's like, what's going to happen tonight? It resets. It's the same space, but something different in the space.
Yeah.
It was like that. I got quite excited about those windows. I mean, I was wrong too. They were all shit. But at the time, I was looking forward to one big finale window, which I guess is the wedding.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best window ever.
I like the structure, even if it consistently disappointed me.
All right. What's your most valuable whatever, Alex?
Andrew McCarthy. I honestly think he manages to make what is fundamentally a really troubled man quite likable. And I really like him in St. Elmo's Fire. So that's kind of really why. Another film, like Toy Story 3 for the last answer, St. Elmo's Fire. I like the fact that in St. Elmo's Fire, he bought a coffin to sleep in because he thought girls would find him cool because he was a bit weird, which was my teenage years. So I really like Andrew McCarthy.
He wishes.
I had a monster lab. No, I didn't. Shut up. What?
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 What's that?
I didn't say anything.
That sounds cool.
Right! Exactly! It was cool!
What, did you put a little sign on your bedroom door and put
monster lab?
Were you eight,
then
by the way.
I set up a chemistry set and I always wore a white coat when I was in my bedroom. No,
but
girls.
No one can see you do that. The girls can't see you.
I know they can't.
How did you get a white coat?
How did I get a white lab coat?
Yeah.
Great question. For an eight-year-old, I presume you were eight. I'm 16. Just say yes.
Yes. What am I answering? Did you notice the sign on his bedroom door last time we were over? Oh, dear.
Keep out. Alex is rude.
Andrew McCarthy is my answer. Who's next?
Me.
Oh, yeah. Vicky.
Kim Cattrall, but she's tied with the song. Because the song's amazing.
Guess what my two answers are. I mean, Kim Cattrall is the most valuable to me personally. Sure. Although, when I went into school...
She just doesn't know yet.
When I went into school and told everyone else about her, I got bullied for it. I remember Matthew Owen kept saying, oh, Chris loves Kim's a troll. Chris loves Kim's a troll.
Well, the last laugh is on him or on you, whichever way around it is, because she's a fox, obviously.
Not a troll,
and
is
a fantastic
she? No.
Actor.
No.
No.
Shut up, Matt.
Got you back, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, Onion.
Yeah.
You just call him Onion because his last name was Owen.
Cool.
Brilliant.
I mean, it's not that far from a troll, from Cattrall.
I think that's cleverer, actually. Yeah.
Kit Kat, there was Matthew Kittredge. Anyway, it was just not good.
Bally, don't forget Bally.
Hi, Russ. He will be listening. Hi, Russ.
Never met a surname he couldn't turn into a nickname.
Hey, I like calling Russell. He insists on being called Bally.
Right.
Anyway, Most Valuable Whatever is the song.
Yes.
Change. What would you change, Vicky?
Here we go. You're going to like this. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Being turned into a doll shouldn't be wish fulfillment because it's not, because it's a living death. It should be a punishment. So she's gone too far. She's trapped in the castle, not castle, Egyptian palace. And she's like, I'm going to leave. And her mum's like, you will incur the wrath of the gods. And she's like, no, I won't. And then she does. And so her arc is something else other than this. But obviously being a doll is not a reward. Being a doll is a punishment, so make it into a punishment, and then she has to leave him and go and do her own thing. It's all set up. She says to him, you need to learn to be on your own, Jonathan Switchett, or something, and he's like, yeah, cool, or we could get married and you could weirdly say, you need to love me forever. Red flag, big red flag at the end. So yep. She has to leave him and go and do her and go and invent things.
I'm with you, because my change is this needs to be some kind of a curse. And it needs to be a ticking clock. So you're a mannequin, you'll turn into a mannequin forever unless
something.
Dot, dot, dot. And obviously in the fairy tales, it's find true love.
Yeah.
In 1980s rom-com, it's probably find true love.
Yes.
Or we could come up with something else. But it has to have
Neck
some
wings.
Kind of tension to it.
Yeah. Hang glide.
Hang glide.
Down yeah.
On a corkscrew.
On a corkscrew.
An invisible corkscrew, like in Morrison's and Blackburn, where Vicky first took LSD in the late 80s. Mine's not that dissimilar to yours. I think we've got plenty of external threat. BJ, Felix, a.k.a. Captain Harris, Richard, Roxy, all of these external threats. We need some internal jeopardy for this relationship, because when she finally can be a human in front of other people at the end, you're like, what? So there needs to be an idea that this was a kind of punishment, perhaps not exactly what you're saying, but the idea that she didn't want to live out her days at night in a department store. They wanted to maybe go out and see the world in front of other humans. And so you need that. It's like, it's not going to work. You need to leave me, go out, live your life, da-da-da-da-da. And then, whoa, actually everything's okay for some reason.
Sure. Perfect.
Lovely stuff.
Great.
We're Brilliant. Done.
That's it.
But I'm following up with a clash cue.
Mm.
So, a few weeks ago, I put on Twitter, what are your favourite needle drops in the movies?
Oh, I did it.
You didn't know. Yeah. You can't read it. So I'm just going to list some that our listeners chucked us. There's so many
I'm
good ones
really
here.
Excited.
Okay. Stuck in the Middle with You from Reservoir Dogs.
Lovely.
Absolutely brilliant. One I wasn't expecting here, This Woman's Work by Kate Bush. From two different movies, She's Having a Baby and A Man Called Otto. Beautiful song. Don't know them. Don't Stop Me Now from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Liking that one?
I do, yeah.
I was on the set when they were shooting that, and you thought on that day, this is going to be one of those scenes, you know? You just thought this is going to change the trajectory of this song, watching them beat the shit out of a man with pool cues in time to the song. Hallelujah in Watchmen.
Oh, I've got one. One of mine. One of mine's a Zack Snyder one.
I think the correct answer is Hallelujah in Shrek. And the times they are a-changing in Watchmen.
Oh, no.
That's what I'm saying.
The cover of, God, you know when he's having the mud wrestling match? I think it's a cover of a Pat Benatar song. I can't remember.
Hit Me With Your Best Shot.
No,
that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Great song, though.
Yeah, and that would work in a wrestling match.
Yeah.
Bittersweet Symphony in Cruel Intentions.
Oh, God, I forgot all about that.
Never liked that song, but it works really well in that movie.
Yeah.
Although my memory from that one is always the Placebo song.
Oh, God. Do you know how weird I was listening to? I listened to those first two albums back to back yesterday for no reason. I was just like, straight back there.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I was listening to them back to back because of the Clash Q, Chris. Because I knew it was coming.
We got some more good ones here. Lust for Life, Trainspotting.
Of course.
Hello. That's a way to start your film. You Could Be Mine, Terminator 2.
I don't remember what bit that happens in.
I don't.
It's when he's walking down the corridor and he's got the gun hidden in the roses.
Oh, of course. Guns and Roses, of course.
Great.
Fucking that, cool.
It works as well.
All right.
It does.
Well done, Jimmy C.
And it's written for the movie. It doesn't always work well when they do that.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about Goodbye Horses in Silence of the Lambs?
That's on my list.
Is it?
I fucking love it. I love it. I love it. Remember when you came to my 40th birthday party?
Yeah, right.
And I fucked up the playlist, and at some point someone was like, if I have to hear Goodbye Horses any more times,
one for the kids.
I'm going to leave. And I was like, it shouldn't even be on there. I'm so embarrassed. But he just was on a loop.
What kind of party is this?
I'm so sorry. A mistake, but I do love that
Vicky,
song.
Vicky, where did you get the full-length mirror, and why have you brought it into the living room?
You look beautiful.
Do you want to chuck some of yours out, Vicky?
Yeah, you ready? Yeah, so I split it into two sections. It's best needle drops in Martin Scorsese films,
okay,
and then in everything else.
The next one is one of those.
So obviously, the best needle drop ever is as far back as I can remember. I always wanted to be a gangster. And then into Rags to Riches. That's the first one. Layla, the last bit of Layla at the end of Goodfellas.
Next on the list from one of our listeners, Layla Piano.
Mean Streets Be My Baby, amazing. I'm nearly done. We talked about this the other week, we were talking about The Rat. So I'm shipping up to Boston in The Departed. I fucking love that. I love it.
I remember that.
Oh my God, the Dropkick Murphys. When it starts and the rat's like, it's just, fuck me, it's amazing.
We need to do that, don't we?
And then I've got two more, but you'll have one of these, so I won't. So the other one is One in Magnolia. That's just lovely. Like, different energy. You know, one is the loneliest number. Mm, and it's so nice. That's it.
Okay, so the one that I've got that you think I've got is Where Is My Mind at the End of Fight Club.
Yeah.
That's, that, to me, that's one of the greatest. And the other one that I was trying to find on my
phone. Next on the list, Where Is My Mind from Fight Club.
Yes! the one that I was trying to find on my phone is the title sequence from the Dawn of the Dead remake. It's the Johnny Cash song.
When the Man Comes Around.
When the Man Comes Around. That is
Johnny Cash, just ask me, dude.
It's one of the greatest title sequences of any film in history. That's how you do it. In fact, it basically is the animated sequence here, but done right.
Yeah.
It was so nice, though, putting this out there. And so many of our listeners or followers on Twitter were just sending ones in that were on my list. So I took them off. Killing Moon from Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
That's a big one for me because that got me into a band that I was never into.
And
the same with Where Is My Mind. I wasn't into the Pixies until I saw that and heard that. I got You, Babe, from Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing a hard disagree here because it made me dislike a song that's quite good.
Because you had to hear it so many times. Yeah.
Spoilt the song.
Yeah. It doesn't give you that same, like, these ones that I love is because you can feel like there's something, it moves you in your body, it moves you in your brain, and you just appreciate everything you're seeing on a different, like you want to dance, like the, especially I'm shipping up to Boston, you're watching that and you're like, oh my God, and you think you're going to move, and it's just, that feeling is unbelievable. Like, and I find it, and the Rags to Riches one, I think about that about four times a day. It's just so perfect.
And it bookends it so well as well with Johnny Rotten doing My Way at the end with him calling it a day as well.
And don't forget Eastbound and Down by Jerry Reed from Smokey and the Bandits. That's one of the...
You can have that.
Because it's brilliant.
I've only got a handful left. So there's a couple of Guardians were sent in. Come and Get Your Love. It works really well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
With him dancing at the beginning. And we get a reprise of that, of course, the other day when we were doing Avengers. And Mr. Blue Sky from Guardians 2.
Yeah.
I think it's better in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, maybe. I think your Smash friends use that song in their spin class.
Do they?
Yeah, I think that's the message. It's been a while since I went to his messages, but I've got that written down.
That's amazing.
A random one, but a good one. Free Bird from The Devil's Rejects. Do not like that film, but that is a very powerful sequence.
Certainly better than its use in Forrest Gump, where she's thinking of jumping because she wants to be a free bird.
Oh, yeah, that's bad, yeah.
Power of Love, Back to the Future. A bit like You Could Be Mine, where it was written for the film and it just works brilliantly and it works as a standalone song. And then the two that were probably my picks, and then people wrote them in. It was great. In Your Eyes, Peter Gabriel, Say Anything. I've even got a blooming doll of him holding up that stereo.
You love that.
I love that. I love that moment. I love that song.
I find it creepy, so I don't like it.
I got
it.
Another one. The Minute Funky Shit by The Prodigy kicks in at the end of Event Horizon. Bosh!
Can't end on a bad note.
That's a great need. Needle drop. And all right, how about Stand By Me at the end of Stand By Me? Beautiful.
Oh, I suppose so.
Yeah.
The one that I couldn't believe someone wrote in with, because I was going to end with it, someone 3 Cubed wrote in and said Danny Boy in Miller's Crossing. Hell yeah.
Oh my God, yeah.
Hell yeah. That's probably my number one. So, great needle drops.
Love it.
Loved it. Great. Love it.
And a bunch of movies I want to do now because we've briefly touched on them.
Great Clash Q. Great Clash Q. All right, that is us done with Mannequin. Let's look ahead to next week. And they are Vicky's choices next week. So Vicky has a clue for us right now. I'm excited.
Let me clear my throat.
Yeah, of course.
I always think that. Okay, you ready?
Yep.
These films.
Oh, shit. Is the laugh part of the clue?
These films.
God damn it. Wait.
Oh, no.
These films.
I hope it's very simple.
Cut all this out. All right, sorry, concentrate. These films appall about authority. Oh God. These films are poor about authority.
I like it.
Yeah, that's
like
good.
It. Thank
yeah,
you.
I like it.
I love it. In fact, that's brilliant.
Yeah, in your arbitrary judgment system, that's brilliant.
Yeah. Yep.
It just depends on how close we are to an hour. If we've got to fill, maybe not.
We never have to fill.
All right, then. That is it. These films are all about authority. Very good. Very good. We will be back on Thursday talking Barbie and seeing which film will be victorious. Until then, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and everywhere else. Till Thursday, have a great week. Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.